super excited. You know, it was a pretty dramatic way to win that game. And the girls, you know, I can't say enough about how well they did together as a team. I mean, it took a full team effort to get through with the heat and everything that we faced. And, you know, we're just so proud to be able to go to state.
That's Beloit softball head coach Tyler Odle as Beloit Lady Trojans going to state for the first time in school history. Not too long ago, they made their first ever trip to state volleyball. And then this past year, got their first ever banner hanging up in the gymnasium, finishing third at state volleyball. And now they have a chance to place or maybe win a state championship, of course, as they've made it to the state tournament. And that'll be in Emporia coming up next Friday and Saturday in Class 3A as they knock off Hoisington Central Plains in an exciting game, 6-5 in 8 innings. And Coach Odle talked about getting that final run across the plate. They had the last at-bat since they were the home team and the number one seed.
We knew that Hoisington was gonna score again, and the girls knew that we were going to have to score, you know, and it was picture perfect with, you know, Carson Brown sacrificing herself on that bunt to get the runner on third, and then that allowed Darby to get that hit to drive it in. And so, you know, I had two seniors. Senior came across the plate to win it. Senior sacrificed herself to get her there. So it was just a really great moment and a great teamwork to get that done.
Well, Beloit's been close a couple times here recently, and, you know, one thing I like to say, and I say this about a lot of different things, is that, and you'll hear even from college and professional sports teams about how, okay, we got over the hump, but if not for the people before us, we would have never got to that point.
Yeah.
You know, Kelsey Treister did a wonderful job with the softball program and put it certainly pointing the ship in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
No question about it. They were very close to making state last year. And then Coach Odle comes in and does a wonderful job, and they're able to get over that hump and win the game yesterday in 8 innings, and that's a game that could have gone either way. And with sports is a very fine line between making state, not making state. We've talked about it in every single sport. All you have to do is look at the NBA playoffs. You know, Kawhi Leonard's completely lucky bounce 4 times on a rim for a shot to go in ends the Sixers season. And if that shot doesn't go in, the Sixers could very well be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals beginning tonight and have a chance for an NBA championship. You know, we know how close Auburn was to winning in the Final Four, and how close Texas Tech was to winning a championship against Virginia, and how close Virginia was to not even making the Final Four.
Yeah.
So sometimes you catch a break here or there, or you make your breaks, whatever way you want to believe into it. And Beloit's been close a few times before, and they were able to crack through last night. Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that now it's like you've gotten over that hump. You might be a little bit more relaxed and free as a team,
right,
too. You don't play as under as much stress after you've finally done that. And and I think that's something that Coach Odle's kind of looking forward to with the team heading into next week. But yeah, it's exciting for sure. And one of those back and forth games where you feel like, you know, you might have a good enough lead here, but you know that the other team, like he said, is going to come back and score some runs and put some pressure on you, and that's exactly what happened. And when you can come out of that as the winner and on top, you definitely feel much better about it and having to work for it and being able to get that win and move on to state.
State won't be till next Friday and Saturday in Emporia, and they do not know, Beloit does not know who their opponent is, because there's still other regionals taking place as late as tomorrow. So they probably won't know till late tomorrow night, Thursday night, or Friday morning who they would play. Have a nice big break in between games, which I don't know if that's good or bad, because usually you qualify and then pretty quickly you get ready for state. But that's not the case with softball, especially with this regional getting over so early on a Tuesday. So congrats to Beloit as they're moving on to the state tournament in softball for the first time in school history. Any other softball or baseball things you want to mention?
No, they were our only team. Okay. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln was who they played in the semis, and they ended up knocking them out. Beloit did 9-1 there in the semis to finish their season. So outside of that, Beloit the only team that was left after that. So
Beloit wins 6-5 in 8 innings last night, extra innings against Hoisington Central Plains to punch their ticket to state. Now, this ties in the Rock Hills and Beloit. Brad Gober, head coach of Beloit, mentioning on Twitter yesterday that Brock McMillan, former Rock Hills head football coach, and you knew he'd have a spot on this football staff.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious. He's going to help coach quarterbacks and outside linebackers with the Beloit High School football team next year. Of course, he was a head coach at Rock Hills, very successful coach there, which means Rock Hills had an opening, and they filled it with Colby Hamill. He is the new head coach of Rock Hills Grizzlies football team, And Dusty had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week, actually yesterday. And, well, first of all, just give us a little bit of background on Colby Hamill before we go into the interview that you can segue to.
Yeah, he graduated from Lakin High School in 2012 and then ended up playing some college football in Duco ranks, last at Garden City, and then 2 years as a starting center, 23 games there at Fort Hays State University, and then ended up going back to Lakin. The last 2 years he's been an assistant football coach with the Lakin High School team and spent some time as a middle school boys basketball coach, a head coach as well. So he's very young, and but does have a lot of knowledge of the game, having played college football. So you know, feel like they've got somebody with at least the experience of the game to come in and take that position. So a little bit about him, and I know he's looking forward to being the head coach, and we'll hear now from Coach Hamill. Welcome back on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Sports. We're joined now by Colby Hamill, the new head coach of the Rock Hills Grizzly football team. First of all, Colby, thanks for taking some time to join us here. I know that a lot of people might not be familiar with you. You're originally from Lakin, so maybe if you can give a little bit of background, first of all, on where you're from and what your, I guess, qualities as a coach will be as your qualifications are heading to Rock Hills to be the new head coach of the Grizzlies.
Yeah, Lakin is a 2A high school that's kind of fluctuated from 3A to 2A with classification changes. There are 11-man football. This would be my second year being assistant coach under Coach Bamberger. Working with him has been great. Second year teaching as well. I've been doing middle school PE with a little bit of high school freshman PE as well. So just kind of looking for first opportunity I can to start coaching and you know, use my tools and my knowledge that I, you know, got from playing in college and in high school, as well as learning from other coaches. You know, just excited for the opportunity more than anything. But yep.
You talk about playing in college and knowing the game there. You were a 2-year starter there at Hayes after you went to Garden City, first for JUCO. But what did you learn in that time in Hayes more recently there that you take with you as a coach and try to build upon?
Definitely the discipline, time management, just those personable life skills that I'm going to try to instill in, you know, the kids that I get. I think that's the biggest you know, factor. You know, if a kid is going to show that he's disciplined, coachable, and, you know, willing to learn and be coachable, you know, you can do a lot with that. You know, other, you know, kids don't have those skills, and it makes it a little more difficult to, you know, get the best out of them. But I think just having the, you know, the experience, the discipline, skills that, you know, Coach Brown taught every player there is going to help in the long run.
You talked a little bit about just moments ago about working with Coach Bamberger, and we know Chris out here from 8-man All-Star weekends and things like that, but know that he was an outstanding player at Jetmore in high school, and then went and played at K-State and then won a state championship in 8-man with Ness City. What did you learn maybe from Coach Bamberger about the 8-man game, and how much are you going to lean on maybe some of his experience and getting some advice from him on that?
Yeah, Coach Bam is definitely known as being successful 8-man. He's doing a fantastic job in Lakin right now. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, I love that I get the opportunity to go coach. Also very sad that I get to, you know, I have to leave him. But his background knowledge, I'm going to do a lot of what he's doing already. You know, triple option. Right, you know, in Lakin they run the flex bone. I'm going to carry a lot of that over on some, you know, reduced formation flex bone here at Rock Hills. You know, defensive-wise, he got the privilege to play at the Division I level, so I've been able to pick his brain, you know, on, you know, linebacker reads and 8-man, you know, what they're looking for, some schemes, you know. So a lot of what Coach Bam did, you're probably going to see a lot of similar areas as well with me, so.
Again, we're talking with Colby Hamill, the new head coach of the Rock Hills Grizzlies football team. Coach, what stood out about Mankato, the Rock Hills, and Jewell County that made you want to come out here?
Definitely the tradition. You know, they've always been traditionally, you know, an athletic, strong school. You know, I got to compete with, you know, some kids while they were in high school, and, you know, got to know some of those guys. And my wife, being from this area, is a huge factor in us moving up to this area as well, just with the family support. Mm-hmm. That's crucial. I mean, being a coach and the coach's wife, I have two little girls now, so having some family there to support, you know, us is big time. So,
what do you know about the group that you have coming back? Clearly they had success last year, but some very good seniors that will be graduating, and you do have a junior in Riley Welchel that will be a senior that I'm guessing you're going to lean upon a little bit. But as far as the group you have there at Rock Hills, what are your initial thoughts on them?
Look forward to this group. I think they might have a little chip on their shoulder. You know, Riley's going to be a great athlete. He's performed in the offseason really well, a sharp performance. You know, I think there's enough pieces to the puzzle there at Rock Hills. It's, you know, they could do a lot of good things. I think it's just going to take a lot of believing in themselves and buy-in and, you know, finding that identity for Rock Hills. I think that's going to be the biggest thing, is just finding what they can be really good at and just, you know, taking off with it.
Colby Hamill, the new head coach of the Rock Hills Grizzly football team. Coach, thanks for joining us here, and we're definitely going to look forward to chatting with you once the fall comes around and football season starts. Best of luck and congratulations on the new job.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that is Colby Hamill, new head coach, Rock Hills Grizzly football team, and congratulations to him on the position, and we will be talking with him during our high school football locker room chats coming up later on this fall. Also, Steve Ternan is back as a head coach at Osburn, and Dusty's actually interviewing Steve as we speak right now. So we may have that interview for you here yet this hour on the Sports Ticket. So don't go anywhere. If you want to hear that interview with Coach Ternan, we very well could have that ready to go here in just a little while during this hour on the Sports Ticket. So lots of changes, and have to admit, Dusty has done a wonderful job being on top of it. As we said over and over and over, we are not a station that covers just one town or one school. We try to cover all of North Central Kansas in our listening area. And as you can tell, with the coaching positions, Keith Christine not being renewed, Dusty was all over that that situation and covered that story from top to bottom. Then Dean Gingler, picked to replace Coach Cassine as the new head football coach at St. John's Tipton. And Dusty was the first one to get Dean and have him on the radio talking about that new position last week. And then got word over the weekend that Steve Tierno was going to be coming back to Osburn and leaving Solomon. And Dusty got in contact with Steve, and right away we had a story on that first thing Monday morning. And then, of course, the news broke that Rock Hills had hired their new head coach, Colby Hamill, and Dusty was on the ball and got an interview with him. So I guess when it comes to coaches' changes, you can count on us here at the radio station at KD Country 94, as we had Rock Hills, St. John's Tipton, and Osburn, all those coaching changes covered for the upcoming high school football season. So once again, we may have the interview with Coach Tiernan coming up here in just a little bit, as Dusty's doing that interview right now in the other studio. So while we wait on that, we can tell you that the Royals, pretty exciting stuff, that you have a new second baseman. That's Nicky Lopez. Now, before we get into what Nicky Lopez and Whit Merrifield and the Royals offense did last night, this is why I really like Whit Merrifield. He is a team player. And Whit Merrifield was asked, because there's a lot of talk that the management of the Royals wanted Whit to stay at second, not be in the outfield. But the team's losing right now. And if you could get somebody in place of Chris Owings, so he isn't playing every day, that would be great. Well, the Royals decided Nicky Lopez will bring him up at the age of 24. He's ready to go play second. But in order for him to play at second, that means Whit Merrifield, they needed to talk to him. And Whit, who's worked so hard to be a really good second baseman, was asked by the media in the clubhouse about changing again. He's been an outfielder. He's played second. Now he's going back to the outfield. Here's Whit Merrifield on the position change, going back to the outfield. And he says, you know what? I've been through this many times before.
Just kind of has happened throughout the course of my life, my career. You know, in high school, I was a shortstop. I got to college, and about a week into fall practice, I got asked if I could play center field. So I said, yeah. Played 2 years in center field. My sophomore year, I was defensive All-American, one of the best center fielders in the country, and as far as college goes. And then going into my junior year, he asked me to play third, second, and right, because we needed some more offense out of those positions. And I said, sure. College and pro ball, center fielder first couple years, got asked to bounce around. Finally got to the big leagues, and he was at second. So I I feel like I worked, you know, and turned myself into one of the best second basemen in the world, really. And now it's best for this team for me to play outfield. And I'm excited for that challenge. I'm ready for that challenge. I'm excited for Nicky. You know, I really am. He's a great kid, a great player from what I've seen, and I'm excited to see what he can do up here. I really think he's going to help our team. And at the end of the day, I'm sick of losing. I really am. And we think he's going to make us better, and whatever he's going to make us better is what we're excited for.
Are you going to miss second base? I know you put a lot of work in to be good there.
Yeah.
It's not like you won't ever play there again. But
no, last couple of years, a lot of hours put into getting, you know, to be where I got to be as the second baseman. So, but again, new challenge. I'm excited about, you know, taking on this outfield challenge.
So at Merrifield, pretty simple. I like to play second. You can tell. I enjoy second. I worked hard to be a really good second baseman, but I care about winning more. I'm sick of losing was his exact words. See, there are a lot of young people out there listening, and also young people and their parents that need to be listening to what Whit Merrifield just said. There's a guy that should have been an all-star last year. There's a guy that just got a nice big fat contract in the offseason with the Royals. He's worked his butt off, and he could have easily told the Royals when they came up to him, hey, we got Nicky Lopez, we think he's ready. Would you be willing to go to outfield? And Whit could have said, you know what, I've busted my rear end. It was hard to make this team, should have been here maybe sooner. He could have been selfish about it, said, no, I really don't. I want to play second. You either trade me, or if you bring him up, trade me. He could have been a cancer when it came to this. He was not. Whit Merrifield is sacrificing what he probably would prefer for the betterment of the team. Why? Because he's putting winning above all else. He is a big part of this Royals franchise, whether he's playing center field, right field, left field, second base, first base, or whatever. He still knows that. It's just that now he's going to have to play outfield, which he's okay with, but you could tell he'd rather play second. But he knows Nicky Lopez is an upgrade for them in the lineup, batting second, as he was last night against the Rangers, and the Royals are a better team and a deeper team and a better batting order with Nicky Lopez in and Whit Merrifield playing the outfield. There are so many times I have heard parents, and I really haven't heard the kids. It's more the parents talk and brag about how many points their kid scores in a basketball game, or how far they can throw something in track and field, or how fast they can run, or whatever else. But in team sports, if your kids are all stuck on the numbers and they're worried about their numbers, you're probably not going to have a championship caliber team, and you probably won't have a very good team. It will not fulfill its potential. You need kids that want to make the extra pass in basketball. Kids that will be willing to block for somebody else, even though they feel they should be the ball carrier in football. And in this situation, Whit Merrifield, a pro who could easily be, you know, I'm sure he has an ego, just like every other professional athlete. He could easily have put his foot down and said, that's just not cool, man. I've earned my keep. I've worked so hard at second. Now you're going to jerk me around and ship me to the outfield? I don't know about that. No. He wants to win. Now, if the Royals were winning and he was playing really good second base, I don't know if he would make this move or not. I would guess he would, because that would still make him better. Maybe that would make him from a good team into a great team. But there's so many young people out there right now that should be, if they're in the sports, and it applies to any sport you're in, especially the team sports. If you're worried about getting yours, and as you're a parent and you're part of that problem, where all you care about is how many points your kid scored, and don't even care about whether the team won or lost, then you should get out of team sports. That's my advice to you. You should get out of team sports. Get your kid into golf. Get your kid into tennis. Get your kid into an individual sport. Don't have them play team sports. If all you're worried about every single time is whether your kid hit a home run, or your kid hit a three-pointer, or your kid had a slam dunk, or your kid had a grand slam or stole three bases, whatever the case may be, or you had the three interceptions or four touchdown passes, did you win? Did your team win? And people may be listening to me and going, well, it's not all about winning. Let me tell you something. It isn't all about winning, but winning makes it much more fun. Trust me, at any level, the more you win, the more fun it is to play sports. So what good is it to have a team of talented players and have a whole bunch of individuals worried about their stats, or mom and dad worried about their stats, and the team goes 500? Now, if all those kids would buy in to the individual, not an individual, the team concept, and like, hey, listen, okay, so maybe I'm going to average 11 points instead of 14 points a game in basketball. Maybe I'm going to carry the ball 15 times in a football game instead of 20 or 25. Oh, maybe I've got to play the outfield instead of second base, but we're going to win because I'm unselfish. We're going to win. We're going to buy in as a team. We don't have these huge egos and mom and dad telling me what position I should play because mom and dad doesn't care about the team success. But the kid actually sometimes does. Now, there are plenty of parents out there that do get it, understand team success, and they do understand that, hey, wherever my kid can play to help the team, I'm cool with it. But there are some parents out there, and I see it, trust me, where it's all about their kid. To hell with the rest of the team. You know, they'll put on they'll put on the pretty face. They'll put on the pretty face. But it's all about their kid. And it's like, hey, such and such did this. Oh, by the way, like, how'd the team do? Oh, well, we got third. Shouldn't that be the first thing you say is how your team does? So for all of those parents out there and for all of those individuals out there that are more worried about how many points you score and how many yards you gain in football and how far you throw the shot put and how fast you run and all this other stuff and how many three-pointers you make, how many slam dunks you have, whatever it is, whatever statistic you're into, okay, stolen bases, home runs, base hits, strikeouts as a pitcher, you need to listen to Whit Merrifield. Because I just played a minute and a half cut from Whit Merrifield. This is a guy that has worked his tail off, didn't get to the big leagues till he's 27. If there's ever a guy that's earned to say, listen, I want to stay at second base, it's Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
And Whit Merrifield is making plenty of money. Whit Merrifield could have put his foot down and said, I'm playing second. I've worked so hard. You jerked me around. I played outfield and second. I'm a second baseman, and so I'm staying there. I'm 30 now. Make Nicky Lopez learn a different position. Or trade me. He could be a cancer. Or you know what? Just trade me. If you're going to move me to outfield, trade me. That's not what Whit Merrifield did. Why? Because he is a team player. He's sick of losing. But there are many athletes out there at every level that are perfectly content for their team to suck. But hey, I'm the top scorer.
Yeah.
Hey,
as
long as I'm getting mine, and moms and dads, and I know, I hope to God it's the minority of moms and dads out there, not the majority, although sometimes they're the loudest. Those mom and dads that help keep that going, they are accomplices in that attitude, in that environment. You're all about the individual. Like I said, if you're all about your kid and individual, have them play individual sports. But if you could ever learn anything from anybody on this earth, especially this area, the Royals aren't very good, and Whit Merrifield's having a good season. Do you think Whit Merrifield is enjoying having a good season and the Royals stink?
Negative.
Probably not, because he just said he's sick of losing. But how many athletes, listen, I don't think Carmelo Anthony has ever been really, really upset about losing. And I think that's one of the problems of Carmelo Anthony. Okay? I know he won a national championship in college. You look at Dwight Howard. He doesn't seem to be too upset about losing.
No.
You know, and there's reasons those guys jump around. They're all worried about getting theirs, getting their shots. And Carmelo can say, well, you know, I took less shots at OKC. Well, you had to, because you're not as good anymore. So you can act like you're being unselfish. But when you go the shots per minute and whatever else come up, the stats are not as far off as you might think. There are guys that are selfish. There are women that are selfish. And it's all about, oh, hey, we're down 8-2. Oh, I hope I get another at bat so I can pad my batting average. You should be thinking, I just need to get on and start a rally.
Yeah.
Get hit by a pitch. Take one for the team. Walk. Whatever. Bunt. Well, I'm a home run hitter. Well, home run isn't going to do you much down 8-2. You need base runners, right?
Yeah.
But there are people.
Oh, yeah.
And coaches sometimes allow it to happen. In fact, sometimes coaches encourage it to happen. And you've got Whit Merrifield here, just got a big contract extension. He could be fat and happy and say, listen, no, not moving. He is. He said, I'll accept it. I'll accept the challenge. I can play Wherever I need to play, what's best for the team, Nicky Lopez makes us better. Well, last night, first game, Nicky Lopez, well, he had a decent night. So did Witt and the Royals. Scored 9 runs early in the game. Won 11-5. So far, so good.
And there is a knock to left. We're going to send Merrifield home. Throw by Chu to the plate. Cut off.
Hey.
11-4.
Yeah.
And
celebrate.
Nicky Lopez has his first major league hit.
Nicky Lopez was his first major league hit. And that was right after Witt had his 500th career hit, so they had to take the ball out of play on back-to-back pitches because the next pitch that Lopez served up in the left field. So Nicky Lopez on his first hit and his debut as the Royals second baseman.
Try to put the best swing on the ball as possible, and saw a fastball, and I was able to shoot it the other way. But that is definitely something I'm going to remember. I just try to take it all in once I got to first base. And it's easy, you know, to get up for these games with just having the, you know, the team be so proud of me when I got the hit. So it just made it so much better. This is everything that I've dreamed of when I was a kid, and I'm just happy to be a Kansas City Royal and happy to be here.
Danny Duffy had a 9-0 lead, struggle, but got through 5 innings, and the Royals do get it done. They win last night 11-5, first game of the series with the Rangers at home at the K. Ned Yost talks about Witt's 500th hit and Nicky Lopez's first ever hit.
I didn't even know that was career hit 500 for Witt, to be honest with you. But hit number one was pretty nice. So Witt had a good night, 3 knocks. I mean, just like he does most nights offensively. He's just a very, very consistent, offensive force at the top of the lineup. Nicky had some great at-bats. His first at-bat, runner on second after Witt doubled and, ended up hitting the ball deep to left to move him to third, set up our first run. So I was glad to see Nicky get his first hit. That that's under his belt now, and we just keep moving forward.
Keep moving forward. Royals be back in action tonight, game 2, against a former Royal, Mike Minor, who's off to a good start. 3-3, ERA at 2.68. He was a Royals closer a few years ago in September. Jorge Lopez is on the hill, 0-4, ERA of 6.07. But there's stats out there showing that Jorge Lopez, 22% of his pitches that are strikes have been called balls. He's not getting the borderline pitches at all. And if you don't get borderline pitchers in a Major League Baseball, and then you got to make more and more pitches, and you can't get that call on 2-1 or 2-2, and now it's 3-2, changes the at-bat completely.
Yeah.
So hopefully he starts getting those calls, and there's some people in the Royals organization that are making it known across Major League Baseball, and I'm sure to the umpires that, listen, he's getting squeezed and he shouldn't be. So we'll see if that changes. Royals 15-27, game 2 against the Rangers later tonight. We'll talk NBA playoffs and also a Major League Baseball player that struck out 17 in 7 innings, but I don't think he's probably excited because his team lost, going back to what we're just talking about. And the Chiefs are not a Super Bowl contender. We'll tell you about an interesting article on CBSSports.com that says they aren't. We'll tell you who they think are. And the NHL playoffs continuing, plus Bruce Weber going to coach another team besides K-State. No, he's not leaving K-State. He's going to coach an additional team. That's coming up in a little bit. But Dusty did have a chance to catch up with Steve Tiernan. Of course, Dusty's been all over these coaching changes at the high school football ranks in North Central Kansas. First Coach Cassine and then Dean Gingler taking over. Dusty was the first to talk to him. Then we have Steve Tiernan coming to Osborne again, returning from Solomon. And also, of course, we had Colby Hamill, head coach Rock Hills, the new head coach. He was on with us just a little bit earlier on the Sports Ticket, and Dusty had an interview with him, taking over for Brock McMillan, who's now going to coach quarterbacks and outside linebackers at Beloit High with their football program. And you had a chance to catch up with Coach Tiernan just a few minutes ago in regards to finding out why he's coming back, right?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously he's looking forward to it. He's familiar with everything here, and you'll hear that from him here in this interview. So enjoy this with Coach Tiernan coming back to Osborne.
Welcome back on Katy Country 94, Z96.3 Sports. Joined now by Steve Tiernan, the new, old head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs, and taking the job again to be the head coach for Osborne football. Steve, again, thanks for taking the time to join us here. I guess the first question would be, and what most people would want to know, is why is it the right decision for you to come back to Osborne now after spending 4 years there at Solomon?
Well, let's just hope it is the right decision here. I don't know. The timing was perfect. When I was up there, if I would have been full-time, I was only half-time to start out with, and that was always the next year we'll get it full-time, the next year we'll get it full-time. We just never did, so I opted to come to Solomon, and now it is full-time. My daughter just graduated you know, we're close to our parents. My dad did move to Salina. I don't think he moved because we're there or this close. But, so yeah, we're closer to everybody's parents up there. And just like I said, I enjoyed it when I was there, so hopefully that continues.
And listen, you've had a lot of success everywhere you've gone, and you know, as you look with everything you've done at B&B and Solomon and then Osborne the first time around, when you look at that, how do you feel that can translate into success with the group that you're going to have now at Osborne?
Well, I mean, it's not like we're going to reinvent the wheel or anything. We're just going to go up there and play to our strengths, find out what we have. Are we big? Are we fast? Which I do think we're kind of fast, but just figure out what our strengths are and then just try to form a plan around that and see what happens. I mean, that's, and I do know we play a very tough schedule, so the first few weeks may be kind of daunting and if we're not ready to go, but it is always hard, you know, coming into a new place, trying to get a whole new system, a whole new numbering system, a new terminology all ready to go, and then you start out with, what, Hill City and then turn around with Hoxie. I mean, that's two tough teams right off the bat, so yeah, we're going to have a lot to do early on, that's for sure.
You went through a full class cycle there at Solomon since you were at Osborne, so there's probably going to be some parents that maybe had younger kids that aren't familiar with you that they didn't have kids in high school. So if you can, maybe talk to the Osborne folks here and tell them what can they expect from you as far as your philosophy and what you'd like to do.
Probably as much as anything, just consistency. I mean, we're going to come in and with this plan, meaning consistency on things, just how we handle things. I'm not going to say consistency in the plays we run. I'm just saying consistency in the way things are handled. I mean, if it's this way on Monday, it's going to be the same way on Tuesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. I mean, it's just, and I think that's what's helped to kind of be successful is you just have that. And plus, I mean, just let those know. I talked to kids yesterday. And I told them, you know, I've been a few places, and in all my years, I've figured out this, that players, kids don't care how much a coach knows, but they do care how much a coach cares. And obviously I do care. I'm going to care about each one of these kids, and hopefully we're going to put them in the right spot, and good things will happen. And most importantly, I mean, just have fun. You know, nobody gets paid to play football to win football, so hopefully football games. So hopefully we have fun and we enjoy the year.
You know, we're talking with Steve Tiernan, headed back to be the Osborne head football coach. Coach, one thing that people might want to know about is maybe who would be on your staff. Do you have any idea how you might fill that? I know it might be a different process than in the past.
Yes, right now I'm not sure at all. You busy next fall?
I am.
You work over there on the sideline. I don't know. I'm sure something will come together. And you and I talked the other day, and you asked me that, and I've never had to go through that. Everywhere I've been, I mean, when I went to Osborne, Coach Reiner was the head coach, and he stepped back, and he was the assistant. When I came here, our superintendent, Mr. Cope, he was the head coach, and he stepped back, and he was my assistant. So it will be kind of a search this summer, but I'm sure something will come up.
I know that you talked to the kids yesterday and had a chance to meet with them, but I'm sure you don't know a whole lot about this group yet, but how exciting is it to have like a guy like Darian Holloway that's had a lot of success, has been playing since his freshman year, maybe a guy that's got that kind of veteran leadership maybe that you can take into next season?
You know, and that's the key word you just said. That's one thing we talked about yesterday a lot was leaders. I mean, we need leaders. And, you know, the numbers have been down at Osborne. We did have 18 boys show up at the meeting yesterday, so that's good. I mean, that's up, what, 5 or 6 from what they had last year.
Mm-hmm.
But as leaders, and I've said this everywhere I've gone, you don't have to be a great athlete or the best player to be a leader of a football team. I mean, let's just get the job done. Let's find a way to get the job done. And, yes, with a guy like him, it does seem like it'll be easier to get the job done. But still, we got to be on the same page. We got to make sure. The other thing I really stressed at him is, I mean, to me right now, at this stage in my career, it's probably more important to have these guys be good guys, be role models to everybody, more so than just you're great football players, but you're jerks off the field. I mean, we don't want to do that. We want to be good guys all the way around. So, and they seemed like that, so that was very good. I was very impressed with them yesterday.
With everything that's gone into this now that you've been able to meet them and everything and then coming back close to your home, what are you most excited about being back in this position at Osborne?
I think just the familiarity with the place. I mean, I'm very familiar with that whole area. I mean, being from Tipton and with how the schools run, we have a new superintendent coming in, so hopefully that works out good. But, the weight room, just walking in there yesterday is kind of like, oh, I'm back. I mean, I love that weight room. It's a great big weight room and lots of equipment. And like I said, I kind of know how things run, so probably just being familiar with everything will be the best thing. Plus, when we left them, we had lots of friends there. just being that I haven't seen much. I mean, I've seen some since we've gone, but to be able to see those people more often and just I like that area.
Steve Tiernan, the new old head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs here on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Through the Lake. Coach, we thank you again for taking the time, and we'll wish you the best of luck. We'll look forward to chatting with you and working with you again in the fall, all right?
Yes, I look forward to that too. Thank you.
So that's your new head coach, Osborne Bulldog football team. But yet he's the old coach.
Yeah.
The new old coach, Steve Tiernan, coming back to Osborne. It's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, we're talking about winning. We're just having this speech about, you know, winning. And about you got to put aside the individual accolades or the individual stats and be all in with the team in order to win championships. I don't know of anybody that has won a championship in a team sport where it's been all about one person. You know, I mean, think about it. Michael Jordan didn't win championships until he got Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
He didn't. And people could say, well, Jordan was a great player before Pippen. Yeah, he was, but he couldn't get through and win a championship. He couldn't get to the NBA Finals until Scottie Pippen actually developed into an outstanding Robin to Michael Jordan's Batman. And he also needed Horace Grant to develop into a really good rebounder, yeah, and hit a 15-foot shot. And he also needed Steve Kerr and B.J. Armstrong and John Paxson to hit wide-open shots. And those guys, yes, don't do that. Michael Jordan probably still hasn't ever won a championship.
Yeah.
He also needed Georgetown to throw the ball to the wrong guy to win a national championship. So what we're trying to say is Michael Jordan is maybe the greatest basketball player that's ever lived. He couldn't do it by himself. And he won six championships once he learned how to defer to those guys. And then once crunch time, yeah, he could take over. The games the Bulls were so good at and why they won 72 games that one year, well, that year Jordan was really kind of, there'd be times where he'd take over early in a game, but usually he just kind of got everybody involved, learned how to get people involved. Because when he was early in his pro career, I think he's safe to say he was somewhat selfish.
Oh, yeah.
But he developed into that team player. And, you know, Steve Tiernan, you look at his team. Steve, first of all, he isn't worried about the stats. The only stat that Steve's worried about is wins and losses. You know, in regards
and
to
how are you going to do that?
How are you going to get to that point?
It's not about just the wins and losses.
No, it's not.
It's about building to,
right,
be able to worry about those wins and,
right,
losses,
but,
and understand you're going to get a lot of.
But statistically, that's really the only number.
Exactly.
Probably the bigger number he's worried about statistically is how many kids do I have going out?
Exactly.
How many upperclassmen do I have? You know, do I have some guys that have some speed? Can they run at like a 4.6 40,
yeah,
something like that? You know, are they in the weight room lifting? You know, are they bench pressing 2.25? Whatever. Those are numbers he's interested in. But I don't think Steve, knowing him the way I've known him for many years, I don't think he goes, well, yeah, well, our quarterback he's 32 yards away from throwing for 1,000 this year. I better go get that for him.
Yeah.
I don't think he worries about that stuff too much. He's more worried about, hey, let's win this game. We'll move on. We'll try to win the next game. Let's try to be the best team we can. Let's work together as a collective unit. And those are the coaches that are the best in the business. And Steve Tiernan is one of the best in the business when it comes to 8-man football in the state of Kansas. It is proven everywhere he has been. He makes it to state championship games. I mean, I still don't know how he made it at Solomon. It's still,
yeah,
pretty amazing to me what he was able to do there. And then, you know, Osborne done a wonderful job. Baileyville, B&B, just everywhere he goes. And he's so well-respected. But he gets the kids to buy into the team concept. And, you know, we were sitting here, and I got a text from somebody talking about one of the teams in the area about how they bought into the team concept. Because the reason we're talking about this right now is because Whit Merrifield is moving to the outfield, willing to give up second base so the Royals can be a better team. We're talking about winning. How do you win collectively as a unit? Well, you got to get guys to buy in. And if somebody, if just one guy is not bought in, it can wreck the whole apple cart. And we just talked about the Beloit Lady Trojan softball team making a state for the first time ever. And I heard Coach Odell talking yesterday about how, you know, we don't have a superstar per se on our team, but we've got just a group of really good young ladies that work together.
Yeah.
And that's what you hear. Look at Virginia. Well, who was their superstar that won a national championship this year?
I mean, Duke, the closest you can get is Kyle Guy. I mean, that's
Kyle Guy, and he averaged, what, 16, 17
yeah.
a game. I mean, he wasn't a superstar.
No.
He wasn't a McDonald's, or he wasn't an All-American first-teamer. Duke had all the superstars, right?
Yeah.
And Duke didn't even get to the Final Four. So it goes to show you that you can have all the talent in the world, and that's nice, but if you can't put it together and make it work, Virginia was able to make it work. and they didn't have a superstar, and they won a national championship. You know, Texas Tech didn't have a bona fide superstar. No. I mean, Culver's a top 10 draft pick. You know, DeAndre Hunter of Virginia is a top 10 draft pick. Those guys weren't first-team All-Americans. They were important players on their teams. So you look at the Beloit basketball team this year. I mean, for crying out loud, they went 24-2. They had nine kids that could have started for anybody in this league and for a lot of teams in Class 3A. And if one of them was going to be selfish and say, listen, I'm not going in, coach, unless I start starting. I want to start. That would have rocked the boat, man.
Well, yeah.
That would have caused problems. So they had nine kids. Every one of them could start. But they accepted their roles. And so you had kids coming off the bench that, like I said, could have started for any other team in the NCAA. And they were content because they were content. Now, they'd been losing, it might have been different. But when you're winning, it's all about winning. You know, I think about Vincent Pollan. He had a game where they were winning pretty comfortably. They were playing a team that wasn't that great. And Vinny took, I think, three shots and scored 3 points. Do you think he cared about that?
No.
No. But there are kids that do. Because that would have been an opportunity for Vinny to jack some threes,
yeah,
try to get some points, pad his average, and that's not what he did. Not at all. You know, I think of the football team. I think of Carson Cox. Carson Cox, I think, could be a really good running back. Tough, hard-nosed guy. He carried the ball, I don't know, less than 10 times last year. In fact, I don't know if he carried it until late in the year because of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy that ended up being the fullback, and in that offense doesn't get the ball hardly at all. And he blocked and he blocked and he blocked and he blocked. Had he put up a fit, said, listen, I want the ball, that team wouldn't have won their first playoff game in 4 or 5 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just using those examples because I've covered some of those teams. I mean, look at Osborne, for crying out loud. If you make it all about the stats, and trust me, Osborne football in the past has had some amazing offensive stats.
Oh, yeah.
But if you don't get guys to buy into spreading the ball around and passing it around, like remember when Jake Tiernan was the quarterback, yeah, he had Brant Walters and all these guys, they could Maverick LaRocque and, you know, Graybast. And I mean, you had all this, sure, you had all this talent, but, you know, one guy could have been like, well, listen, I want 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
But that's not going to help us win a championship. But if you run for 1,200 yards, now we have a chance to win a championship.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at some guys that put up these really good numbers, whether it be pro or college or high school. And I know there's a quarterback that was at, I think, Hayes a couple years ago, and he threw for tons of yards, like 500 yards this game, that game, and they lost almost every single one of them. I'm like, what good was that? Great. You have all these nice numbers. You're down 28-7. You're always throwing the ball. That pads your numbers. You know, you threw the ball 55 times. You completed 30 for 418 yards. That's an impressive night. What was the final? We lost 56-35. Why does it matter? Jeff Van Gundy, I think, is one of the best in the business. And the other night, he was doing the game. I can't remember which game it was, NBA playoffs. And this one guy had some numbers or whatever else, and they lost. And Jeff Van Gundy said, numbers don't mean anything. He said, it's about the W's and the L's. Now, that's at the professional level, of course. He's like, it's all about wins. He goes, great. So you average 27 points a game. Did your team win anything? You know? Now, James Harden, his teams are getting better, and he averages a lot of points. That works out for them. But for some teams, it's better to have that balance. And you look at Osborne football, the one year they were just so balanced. They could throw it. They could run it.
Yeah.
Every one of those kids could have said, I want more.
Yeah.
I need more. You know? Easily could do that. One of the Beloit kids could have said, that's it. I want to start. I'm putting my foot down. They didn't. They didn't rock the boat because they wanted to win.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, you see that now, but you don't, I don't know. We hear so much, maybe it's the media's fault. We hear so much about the kids that do rock the boat. We hear so much about the parents that rock the boat and think they know more than the coaches. But maybe it's not as bad as we think. It's just that we hear more about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because we see it around here. Lots of young men and women, young boys and girls that do buy into the team concept and do well and make it deep into the playoffs or have a great season or win a league title. And they give up and sacrifice statistics, which is the way it should be. It's the way it should be. If you're going into high school basketball all about, I'm going to average 20 a game because I'm going to get a scholarship. I don't care about the team. I just want my scholarship. Mom and dad want me to get a scholarship. So I better go out and average 20 a game. Listen, if you're a really good player and you average 15 a game and 8 assists and 4 rebounds, something like that, compared to scoring 22 a game and 2 assists, It's on film. Trust me.
Yeah.
Trust me. The next level gets that.
Yeah. If you're in basketball and feel like you have to average 20 a game to get a scholarship, and like you said, you're averaging 1.5, 2 assists a game, your defense is lacking. You might get one steal a game.
You don't pass the ball to the open guy.
And all the coaches can see all that stuff. Sure. They're not looking for a guy that's going to jack up 30 shots a game to score 20.
No.
Okay? They're looking for a guy that's going to take 15 shots a game to score 20 and have 5-6 assists a game at that level, if you're talking that level. Because if you're in high school and you're that talented, you should be able to average 5 or 6 assists a game. If you're a guard averaging 18.6 assists, coaches are going to see that way quicker than a guy that's averaging 21-1.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, my nephew's trying to do that, we're preaching to him, be a team player.
Yeah.
Understand what you've got to put on film is not just this play here and just all your great shots.
Right.
You got to show that you're versatile. You can pass the ball. You can play defense and all those other things. And that goes with any sport. I like how you're talking about being balanced with what Osborne was, with Tiernan, they could throw in run.
Sure.
Well, that doesn't always necessarily have to be balanced with two different segments of the game.
No, and the running pass.
It can be so balanced in the run that Osborne this past season has two guys that are over 1,500 yards rushing and a freshman that's over 800 yards rushing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a triple option attack that was nothing fancy at all.
Right.
It was just who's going to get the ball. They were deceptive with it. They were making sure that they could read the linebackers and read the defense, and Darnell did a great job of that as a senior quarterback. Mm-hmm. So, if you have a veteran leader back there that understands the game, you can still get all those stats that you want and still win. So that's lightning in a bottle right there when you can get two guys with over 1,500 yards rushing. Now, Darnell, if he's the focal point, maybe could have run for 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
But they all understand that our end goal here is to win a championship.
Right.
And they came darn close to doing it against a very good Hanover team.
Absolutely.
And so that's what, if you're looking at examples of teams that understand what it takes to win a championship, you can all go full circle back to Osborne football. I mean, they understand what it takes and what they need to do to win championships. And there was a great cut from Coach Tiernan yesterday. Teams are scared to play them now. They used to not be.
Yeah.
But ever since Osborne's come down to 8-man football, and then, that first year with Coach Reiner, and then when Tiernan took over the first time, they don't want Osborne on their schedule right now. And so that's what it's all about. It's getting kids to buy into what you want to sell.
Mm-hmm.
To be successful and win championships, and they've got two of them under their belt now in the last however many years.
All you need to do, you can put together a montage of interviews with coaches and players immediately after they win a championship, whether it be a state football high school championship, state basketball championship, or even a league championship, a sub-state championship, a World Series championship, Super Bowl. What's the first thing that the coaches or the players almost always say first? There's one of two things they say. What are they?
I'm talking with an individual player. It's usually I couldn't have done this without my team.
Yep.
And then
we have a great group of guys.
Yeah,
that's usually
the
first thing
from
you hear.
From the coaches, you get a great group of guys. Yeah.
Or I thank the Lord, God.
Yeah.
And then it's the team, the guys.
Yeah.
It's never about any statistics.
Yeah.
You never hear numbers thrown out there at all in these interviews. When guys are being doused by champagne and this and that and celebrating victories, they'll talk to the general manager. They'll talk to the manager. They always deflect the responsibility. Like, listen, we couldn't have done it without the manager. The manager's like, well, we couldn't have done it without this. And then the players are like, hey, we just had. What I almost always hear, we had a great clubhouse. Like when the Red Sox went out last year, that was the first thing I heard from the Red Sox. Almost every single player, and it's not like they've rehearsed it. They're just like, we just had a great group of guys. And what do you hear after a team comes back and wins? It's, well, we have guys in the Royals are a great example. In 15, the Royals were down, and they were going to lose to Houston in the divisional round of the playoffs. Mike Moustakas was rallying the troops saying, listen, we're going to come back. We're going to win this. And they all believed. They were all on the same page.
Yeah.
There was not a superstar on that Royals team that won the World Series in 2015. There was not one superstar. There wasn't.
No.
That was a group of guys that got along great, came up together, some of them in the minor leagues. They got the right veterans mixed in. They had a dominant bullpen, and they had the right manager, the right general manager. But what did they say after they won the World Series? They're the same thing everybody else says. We have a great group of guys. Couldn't have done it without this. Or we added this guy, and he made a big difference. But they don't talk statistics at all.
Yeah.
They don't sit here and go, well, this is my third championship since I started playing baseball. Or, well, you know, I want to thank God. And, you know, I had a great series. I hit 433, three home runs. You don't hear that. It's all about the chemistry.
Yeah.
It's always about the chemistry. It's always about what we have here on this team. They talk about the group of guys, the group of gals, WNBA. I've seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
The same exact stuff. And you may say, well, that's boring. It's always the same thing. Because it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. And it's awesome to see. And so it just goes to show you that you can work as a team for a better goal as a team instead of worrying about your individual goals. Now, like you said, sometimes you can get your individual goals as part of helping the team win.
Yeah.
And as long as that comes in the process of that, there's nothing wrong with that. But if your goal as a player or as a parent for your kid is all about your kid's stats and all about them personally doing what they got to do to get a scholarship or to do this or do that, then you could have a problem on that team. And we've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen it. Now, how about Chris Sale? I'm going to tell you something. Chris Sale last night, Red Sox left-handed pitcher, won a World Series last year with the Red Sox. He's making a ton of money. Do you think he's happy today? I'm going to guess not, but he should be if he was selfish. He threw 7 innings last night, struck out 17 Rockies in 7 innings, did not walk a batter. Just the 16th time in MLB history that a pitcher has struck out 17 or more without issuing a walk. And guess what? The bullpen blew it. And the Rockies came back, beat the Red Sox 5-4 in 11 innings. So Chris Sale's performance, honestly, doesn't mean much, does it? Not
grand
for the team.
Of thing, it doesn't mean
really
anything.
Really doesn't. Doesn't mean anything. Got no decision. Bullpen blew it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he blames the bullpen. Maybe he's not a team player, but I don't think he's going around bragging. I got 17 strikeouts. He'd been more comfortable talking about it had they won.
Yes.
So, once again, there's an example of that. All right, the NBA draft lottery, pretty interesting last night, as the New Orleans Pelicans win the lottery, the ping pong balls or whatever they do. Pelicans had a 6% chance. The Knicks and a couple other teams had a 14% chance. They changed the draft lottery a little bit this year in regards to the weighting of the ping pong balls, I guess. Pelicans get the number one pick, and it's a big deal because everybody wants Zion. Zion Williamson, the freshman from Duke. Memphis gets a second pick. The Knicks the third. I know Riley is depressed about that. The Lakers, fourth. The Cavs get the fifth pick, and so forth and so on. David Griffin is the executive vice president of basketball operations with the New Orleans Pelicans and talks about getting the number one pick, which will be Zion Williamson.
We're going to be attracting best-in-class individuals. It's what we want to do, and it's what we want to be about. And this is certainly representative of that, right? I mean, it's something that we certainly are grateful for. And I think when you live in a place of gratitude, good things start to happen from there.
Maybe it's a good thing they did not trade Anthony Davis. Got him under contract for another year. Maybe Davis suddenly goes, listen, why would I go to the Lakers and play with an aging LeBron when I can be here? And I've got Zion Williamson, who I think will fit perfectly with Anthony Davis. Their games,
yeah,
I think, fit really well. If I'm Anthony Davis, I let this play out a little bit.
Oh, without question.
Maybe even say, have a good year and stay okay. I will stay here long term.
Oh, and I think it's a great thing that the Pelicans said, we're going to wait, too. You know, we're going to let it play
That's
out.
That's right. Because, he's under contract.
You know, we don't have the best chance to get this number one pick.
Right.
But he, like you just said, he is our player. He's under contract with us. And we get this number one pick, we might change his mind and maybe get him to play at his full potential.
Did you see the video, the ticket office reaction, that all the employees in the ticket office of the Pelicans, they were going berserk like they had just won the lottery. Well, they did. They won the NBA draft lottery. It was
Well, and they said the ticket sales reps will get at least $10,000 more per person this year.
Oh, yeah. Because people are going to flock and buy tickets to see Zion.
They're going to be sold because of Zion.
Yeah, Zion didn't look super happy that the Pelicans
I think he was shocked.
I think he was, too.
I don't know that he really is mad that he's going to end up in New Orleans.
No, I don't either.
I think it was just that shock of, like, I wasn't expecting this.
I think he was like, I'm going to the Knicks.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out that way. Well, you know, no offense to Memphis, but New Orleans is a better situation than Memphis. Market-wise, New York and L.A. would be bigger markets, but NBA is a global sport, and I mean, come on, you know.
That's for me. Is
LeBron was
focused
in Cleveland
so much? I know everybody's focused so much about him going to New Orleans. He's going to play in 41 different places throughout the. I mean, not 41 different. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's 41 road games that he's going to be playing.
Yes.
He's going to be the ticket and the draw, no matter where he's at.
Absolutely.
This is a sport that you're going everywhere.
Yes.
Within about a 5-month span, so it's like. it doesn't matter as much as people think it does. Now, football is a little different because you're not going a lot of places every year.
Right.
You're only going to 8 different places other than your home. And so that's a little bit, when you're NBA and Major League Baseball, as far as that's concerned,
right.
Your superstar can go wherever you want it to go, and no matter where you're playing.
And the NBA is more about the player individualized.
Exactly.
Nowadays, you follow the player, not
marketing
the team.
Players for
I'm not a Cavs fan,
while.
I'm a LeBron fan. I'm not a Knicks fan, I'm a Carmelo Anthony fan. I'm not a Rockets fan, I'm a James Harden fan. You know, I'm a Kevin Durant fan, not an OKC fan. And same thing here. It's like I'm a Zion fan, suddenly you're gonna have all these people wearing Pelican jerseys because they're Zion fans, not because they're Pelican fans. So we just talked about team concepts, but the NBA in regards to a marketing thing is so more individualized to market, but yet obviously you gotta have a really good team around you and sacrifice, as the Golden State Warriors do. They brought in Kevin Durant. Now Durant's out with an injury. Here's an amazing statistic. This is why I kind of laughed when people were jumping off the Warrior wagon, because, well, they can't win a championship now without Durant. Do you know the Golden State Warriors last 29 games where Steph Curry's played and Kevin Durant has not? You know what the record is in those 29 games?
26-3.
28-1. 28-1 without Kevin Durant. They added one to that list last night as Steph Curry, 9 three-pointers. He had 36 points. Golden State rolls the Blazers in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals last night.
Step off a screen, takes a three straight on, knocked out another one. His 8th three of the night. And the Warriors back up by 13. It's 73-60. Curry's got 31.
Well, I said this yesterday. Listen, the Warriors' hard part's over in regards to their conference. They got through Houston. Portland, the Nuggets would have been a much tougher draw than the Blazers. The Blazers are the perfect team for the Golden State to play, especially without Kevin Durant. Enes Kanter's an important part of the Blazers because their starting center got hurt late in the season. He's playing with a banged-up, separated shoulder. He can't guard. He can't play that pick-and-roll with Thompson and Curry trying to defend him. And Portland has all kinds of problems they have matchup problems with Golden State. Golden State matches up really well with Portland. And last night, I know Portland's tired because they had to play Game 7 2 days ago in altitude in Denver. But I've seen this. They've played before in the playoffs, Dame Lillard against Golden State. And Golden State just has too many weapons. But Portland, I just don't think, can defend Golden State, even without Kevin Durant. And we saw that last night. I mean, Portland left. Steph Curry was wide open. They have to play much better defense. And I think they will make adjustments. And they could easily win Game 2. And they might win a couple games in the series. But, I mean, for crying out loud, of all the teams that they had to play right now, Golden State, in this round of the playoffs, I think it's absolute perfect matchup for Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. And it sure looked like it last night.
Yeah, because they don't have a guy that's – they don't have a – Jokic would have been a problem for the Warriors.
They couldn't have matched up with him.
And they don't have that.
No.
Portland does not. And his Cantor's not that guy.
And the Nuggets are a better defensive team, I think, too.
And so, it is a good matchup. I think it's more fun matchup for the public to watch than it's Portland, just because of the backcourts that both teams have. But – I mean, Lillard's struggling right now a little bit with his shot the last couple of games. So that doesn't help that.
No,
but
McCollum and Lillard have to play really well.
Exactly.
To have any chance.
They don't have a chance at all without their backcourt performing.
No, Rodney Hood would have to be great.
Last night,
They don't have enough firepower. Even without Durant, the Warriors have more firepower.
Yeah.
I think this series is 5-6 at the most. I'd say 5. I think Portland might get a game, and it might be Game 2. Who knows? But Golden State can win on the road. So I just think it's a perfect matchup for Golden State. At this level, the playoffs, that's saying something. All right, NHL playoffs continuing. And last night, it was the Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes. And, well, Bruins dominating.
It's batted away by Bergeron back into the Boston zone. He plates it up ahead to DeBrusk. 25 seconds to go in the Boston power play. Bruins in the offensive zone. Marchand cuts in. Backhander. They score! A deflection in front.
Bruins up 3-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. They beat Carolina 2-1 last night. The Sharks and the Blues game 3 tonight in St. Louis. That series tied 1-1 tonight on NBC Sports Television at 7 o'clock. NBA playoffs, back to that for a moment. Eastern Conference Finals begins tonight. Game 1, Toronto versus Milwaukee. Who you got?
I pick Milwaukee in 7.
Milwaukee in 7. I'd be surprised if this series doesn't go 7.
Yeah.
I think this is
I was talking about it Monday. I'm like, I'm thinking maybe I think it's going to go 7.
I think it's 7, and I'm going to go opposite of you. I'm going to say Kawhi's the difference. Toronto wins over Milwaukee. Greek the Freak got away at least one more year. We shall see how it turns out. Bruce Weber is going to coach a Team USA Under-19 World Cup team. He'll be in the Under-19 World Cup in Greece. So he's going to get coached some of the nation's best young hoops talent. And Weber said in a statement, it's an honor to represent Team USA at such a prestigious event like the World Cup. I have had a long association with USA Basketball as a committee member, court coach, and an assistant to Coach Gene Cady for several championships. Of course, Coach Cady began his coaching career at Boyd High School, if you did not know that. Okay, and then we end with this, a little NFL for you, for people that really love football. Jason LaCanfora, if that's how you pronounce his name, he had an article recently holding Clark Hunt accountable for the Chiefs stuff, and I thought that was a really good article. But I remember bringing up that article and saying I don't agree with him a lot. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So just when I like one of his articles, then he comes out with this one. NFL 2019, only five teams have a legitimate shot at winning the Super Bowl. Here are the five who could do it. Now, right away, a Chiefs fan's going to go, well, obviously Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to be one of those, right? As soon as I read the headline, I'm like, I guarantee you this guy will not have the Chiefs in this.
Yeah.
All right, want to take a guess at the five teams he says are the legitimate threats to win a Super Bowl? The Chiefs are not one of those.
Yeah, I have not seen this, so this will be on the
fly. All right.
The Rams.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
I'm already 0 for 1.
Nope.
I'm going to say, does he have the Chargers in there?
Yes.
Yeah, the Saints.
Yes.
Probably the Patriots.
Yes.
By default.
And they made some good moves.
Yeah.
Well,
everybody
gets caught up in Gronkowski leaving. They did a lot of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are there, those are in by default.
Amen.
Man, I'm
you're going to have a hard time getting the other two.
Bears, maybe?
Nope.
Nope.
Yeah. The Eagles.
Okay.
Well, Carson Wentz with the questions with his knee.
Yeah, I know.
Seattle is his fifth one. Seattle lost a lot on the defensive side with some notable players. Yeah. Doug Baldwin's now gone. They traded Frank Clark, although I think they still have young defensive talent. Russell Wilson. And then he's got the Chargers with Phillip Rivers, who's like 1,000 years old. He has Patriots, Saints, Eagles, Seahawks, and Chargers. I'm sitting here going, okay, who made it out of the NFC to the Super Bowl last year?
The Rams. That's,
so how can,
that's
they, why I, how can like, they? So how are the Rams not one of these teams?
I know.
I think it's because of Jared Goff. That's probably why. And then the other one is, and notice in all these teams he picked, Seattle, Russell Wilson, really great quarterback. Carson Wentz was MVP a couple of years ago until he got hurt. So he's betting on that. Drew Brees, MVP candidate. We know about Tom Brady. But the one that doesn't fit to me is the Chargers with Phillip Rivers if you're joined by quarterbacks. How is Patrick Mahomes, and after what he did last year and with how bad that defense was, and for a team to be, you know, had a coin flip away from maybe winning that game and going to the Super Bowl, and they've got those key guys back, although maybe he's assuming Hill won't be part of this team. Maybe that's what he's thinking. No Kareem Hunt the full year.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you can't at least include him as one of the five contenders.
Yeah.
I mean, to put the Eagles and the Seahawks and the Chargers ahead of the Chiefs, I can see the Rams being ahead of the Chiefs. That's fine. Four teams higher than the Chiefs? Okay, I'm fine. But the Chiefs aren't one of the five legitimate contenders to win a Super Bowl? Is he high?
That story right there is for him to get people to talk
about.
It
is.
That's what that is.
It is.
There's no question to me in my mind. If you're going to put the Chargers in there, you have to put the Chiefs in there.
Oh, no question.
I mean, you can't.
Chargers can't win the division.
I think it's going to be the Chargers because for some reason there's this love fest with the Chargers.
Every year.
Like, I don't get it. But,
I don't either.
You know, but, I mean, I know, I guess, that they technically had the same record as the Chiefs last year. But, you know, the Chiefs did have the tiebreak and got the number one seed. So, it's like every year there's this love fest with Phillip Rivers, and it's like, listen, I like the fire that Phillip Rivers plays with.
Oh, I do too.
But he makes too many mistakes for him to ever be up there with this, to have this bestowed upon him. Like, you're one of only five teams that even has a chance to win this.
Maybe the writer of the article was so, upfront, which I applauded him for because we were the first ones to talk about it. At least here locally, in regards to Clark Hunt. He needs to take responsibility for the guys he drafts and has in his organization, so forth and so on. And trading for Frank Clark after the Tyreek Hill deal, which, you know, is Tyreek still going to be a part of the team this year? We don't know yet. And so it's almost like he's holding that against the Chiefs, like, okay, I don't agree with what they're doing, so they can't be one of my final five. It's like, they got Patrick Mahomes, dude.
Yeah.
He's the star of the league now. And it's one thing if the Chiefs barely got into the playoffs last year. They were one coin flip away, or one offsides penalty away, from being in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the guy that threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns is coming back for his second full year as a starter. They improved their defense. They have a new defensive coordinator. They've addressed that. You still have Kelce. You still have Watkins. And you got one of the best offensive coaches in the NFL, and Andy Reid, and they're not one of the top five teams to contend for a Super Bowl. He's doing that to leave them out on purpose, like you said, or he's just got a problem with Kansas City, because I know he was outspoken about the Royals back in 14 and 15. So, interesting. We don't agree with it, of course.
No.
But I guess read his article or don't, because if you do, you make his day probably. Have a great one, folks.